Your conference is being recorded.
Great. Do we still have everybody on the call? Did I lose anyone?
We're here.
Okay, good.
We're here.
Great. We'll start in just about another minute. We'll wait for folks to get on. We had quite a large number that registered for tonight, so... And did everybody get the handouts that I sent yesterday?
Yes. Yeah, I got them.
Okay, great.
Yep.
We didn't get them here in Grand Forks.
Who is that?
Development Homes.
Do you have an email? I can send them to you right now.
P. Hyde at developmenthomes.org.
Again?
P. Hyde, H-E-Y-D, at developmenthomes.org.
P as in Peter, H-E-Y-D, at developmenthomes.org.
Perfect.
Okay, they're on their way.
Thank you.
Yep. Did anyone else not get them?
We are double checking right now. We have them. We just
okay, great.
Them out.
All right, good. Well, without further ado, I really want to thank Vicki, who's been a longtime staff for Family Voices. She's at our Bismarck area. She supports the Bismarck Minot area. I just can't say enough good about Vicki, and I think you're going to enjoy her as well. So I'm glad everybody got the handouts. We're going to record this call and post it up on the website. If you have a lot of noise in your background area, if you mute on your phone, that would be great. Otherwise, if you need to mute, it's R6 to mute and #6 to unmute. So, Vicki, I'm just going to let you have at it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Janine. Okay. Well, tonight we're going to talk about ABLE accounts and the ABLE Act. My PowerPoint is kind of long, but I do this in trainings. But just so you know, after tonight's call, if you have more questions, you can certainly email or call me, and I can help further and do one-to-one support on ABLE accounts as well. So I'm going to start out with a little background on it. The ABLE Act stands for the Achieving a Better Life Experience Act, and this was a bipartisan legislation, which actually is kind of nice to hear nowadays, but that's what this was, and it would ease the financial burden for individuals with disabilities by creating a tax-free account that could be used to save for disability-related expenses. So some of you may have heard of college accounts. They're 529 accounts as well. This is similar in structure as a college save account. Okay. And if you guys are following the slides, I'm just now going, I think, to the third slide. So in North Dakota, the ABLE Act, it was signed on April 1st, 2015, the North Dakota governor signed into law, and that was House Bill 1373, which there were plenty of us working on that bill, but it was signed. And currently on the North Dakota College Save Plan site, which is at the Bank of North Dakota under James Barnhart, there is also some information on 529 ABLE accounts. Okay. Next slide, we are working. So what actually is a 529 ABLE account? Okay, well, it's an account that was established in the new section of 529A. Okay, these are qualified accounts that receive a preferred federal tax treatment, which basically they are tax-free. Whatever is in there and whatever you spend it for is tax-free. But everything going into an ABLE account is post-tax, and we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. It enables individuals to save for disability-related expenses, And under the 529 ABLE accounts, those disability-related expenses are quite broad, so we'll talk about some of those tonight as well. The assets are distributed for those expenses will be disregarded, as I said, for special treatment. Determining most federal means-tested programs, such as Medicaid and SSI or SSDI. Currently, the total annual contributions that you can put into an ABLE account are $15,000 a year. We are hearing rumblings that that may go up as Congress decides if they're going to change the way Social Security looks, the SSI payments, and the SSDI. So I always try to update people if there's new legislation that is coming out regarding ABLE accounts. It is a disregard for Medicaid, so if you are on Medicaid or looking to get on Medicaid, the money in your ABLE account does not count as money towards Medicaid. And then we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about how it affects supplementary security income or SSDI as well. But currently you can have up to $100,000 in your account before Social Security is suspended, and that means suspension, so you don't have to reapply. Once some of those dollars are spent down, then your SSI would kick in right away again. Okay, and we'll discuss those further on. Currently, you must be disabled before the age of 26. Currently, there also is law on that to change that age to 46. How is disability defined? It is, of course, defined by the Social Security Administration or the fact that if you have a disability certificate, and we'll talk what those are as well. The designated beneficiary is the account holder, okay? And, yes, there is, on ABLE accounts, there is a Medicaid, they call it a clawback or payback upon death, okay? So that just gives you a little brief of what 529 ABLE accounts are, and we'll go more into depth with that. But I, like I said, who's eligible? So really there's only two criteria that need to be met for who's eligible. And the one we talked about was you must be disabled before the age of 26. And below, if you'll see on my slides, I'll it talks about the ABLE Age Adjustment Act. That is currently in Congress right now, hoping to raise that age to the age of 46. So, you know, if you were 35 when you might have been diagnosed with a disability or like autism or something, unfortunately you are not eligible to open an ABLE account, but we're most certainly trying to get that changed. The next requirement is the severity of a disability. So, currently, if you are receiving SSI or SSDI, the Supplemental Security Income or Social Security Disability Benefits, you automatically meet the severity of disability, which you would need to have for ABLE accounts, okay? Originally, it started out as you must be receiving SSI, and I see I didn't change this in here. But currently you do not have to be receiving SSI or SSDI, but you have to have a disability that Social Security recognizes, okay? So an example of that I'll just use in my own case. So my son has autism, but he is not receiving currently SSI benefits. Social Security does recognize that he has a disability. So that goes down to that third bullet of having a disability certification. Since I have it here, we'll discuss it here. Really what it is you have to have your primary care doctor make sure that they have a letter with their letterhead describing the disability and how it was diagnosed. So for my son, his primary care on her letterhead, you know, my son has a diagnosis of autism. He was screened under the DSM earlier, so the DSM-4, but it still qualifies for him as having a disability, okay? And Social Security recognizes that. So some people have asked me, you know, what if I have a disability and I'm not sure it's recognized by Social Security? What you can do is fill out the paperwork for Social Security, which is the beginning portion of that, and they will send you a letter stating whether that is a disability that they recognize or it is not. And you can do that without even knowing that you might not qualify for those benefits due to income. So that's kind of confusing for people, but I am not in the profession to tell you that you have a disability or not. You know, your doctor, your physician may be able to help that out, but I do get a few calls where people say they have this condition and I'm, you know, I typically would redirect you back to your physician or, like I said, to fill out the initial paperwork for Social Security, and they will certainly let you know if that falls under their categories. So how confusing is that for anybody? No? If it becomes later on, you can always give me a call, okay? So why are ABLE accounts needed? Well, the biggest thing was, you know, we've always said if you have a disability, you have to stay poor. Otherwise, you do not qualify for any other benefits. And, you know, there was a big push, and it started with the National Down Syndrome Association. And so it became kind of a national push, you know, trying to get some legislation so that whether you have a disability or not, you should be able to live some of the same lifestyles and quality of life and, you know, also access those benefits that you may need. So that's really why ABLE accounts became a law, and that's really why it was bipartisan, because everybody believed for that to be true. And that's currently why they're looking at Social Security, too. If you access that, you know, you can only have so many dollars in assets, which is like $2,000 individual, $3,000 if you're married. Well, currently in legislation, they're really taking a hard look at those and trying to change those so you do not have to stay poor. Okay. So I'm on the next slide that talks about the certification, and that's what I talked about before. So the individual, which is also the beneficiary of that ABLE account, has to be determined physical or mental impairment that results in marked and severe functional limitations. Okay, and that's how the Social Security Administration defines disability. So one, they can be expected to result in death or has lasted or can be expected to last for a continuous period of not less than 12 months. Or is blind and such blindness or disability occurred before the date on which the individual attained age 26, okay? So people ask about this disability certification, okay? So I got a piece of paper from my doctor, and it says all this on this. Now what do I do with it? For most applications, if you apply for an ABLE account, they don't ask you to upload any documents certifying you have a disability. They ask you if you have one, and it's a yes or no question, okay? But the IRS is the leading agency who governs ABLE accounts, and so you must keep that disability certification in a good area, lock it up, or, you know, wherever you know to find it. Because if you ever get audited for an ABLE account, you will need to prove that. So always just keep that on hand. But as I said, most applications do not ask you to upload that. That may change in the future. We shall see. So So we talked about, you know, ABLE accounts, and one of the really benefits for having an ABLE account is for that supplemental security income. So when I talk about this, it is not, I'm not only talking about SSI, I'm also talking about SSDI. Okay, so if I happen to just say SSI, you know this, all this information is true for SSDI as well. So under the supplemental security income, or SSI, you can have up to $100,000 in an ABLE account, okay? But you must qualify, that individual must qualify for SSI on its own terms, okay? So you can't hide money in an ABLE account, so Social Security is not going to count that. Okay, and then once your ABLE account reaches $100,000, like I said, it would be suspended. You'll get notified, and you may not receive an SSI check that month. You might have to spend down below the $100,000, and then it'll automatically kick back in for SSI. Okay, so again, always must remember that all the rules still apply for SSI. So if you are working in a job and you make $2,000 a month, okay, you can't take that $2,000, put it into an ABLE account, and hide that from SSI that you've made it that month, okay? All dollars that go into ABLE accounts are post-tax dollars, okay? And you cannot hide money in an ABLE account. So on your own, if you qualify for SSI, your income is where it's supposed to be, okay? Those disregards for it are in place, like you get to save your first 20 and those types of things. Once you have that check from SSI into your bank account, whichever bank account you're holding, you don't have to, currently, if you didn't have an ABLE account, you have to spend that money down, okay? Because you can't keep having increased of dollars because you won't qualify for the next month for SSI. So if you receive $550 in SSI check, you put that into, it goes directly into your bank account. You can pay whatever you need to pay off of that. If you want to pay rent or you buy something in, you know, whatever you might need, that qualifies for you to buy under SSI. Let's say you have, you bought whatever you needed to, but now you have an extra $200. I don't know what to spend it on. I don't really need anything else that I can use those SSI dollars for. You can take those and transfer into an ABLE account, okay? So that money goes into the ABLE account, and they don't count that as income for SSI once it's in the ABLE account, okay? So we'll talk about this again later up when I give some scenarios, and then at that time, if you have some questions about that, you can certainly ask them, or like I said, I will do one-to-one with those. But just know that you must first qualify under the SSI rules, okay? For Medicaid, the assets in there do not determine for Medicaid eligibility. So, you know, with other accounts, if you have a regular savings account, that counts against you for Medicaid. Whatever is in an ABLE account does not. We did talk about the Medicaid payback, so we'll talk about that when we get to what you can use ABLE accounts for. But just to know at death, yes, there can be a Medicaid clawback on ABLE accounts. So you might also be accessing some state benefits. And I have a list there of the state benefits in North Dakota that are disregarded. And some of those are for payments to the elderly. We call them SPED or expanded SPED. There's aid to the blind remedial care. There's an autism voucher, a substance use disorder voucher, SSI long-term care subsidy program, Children's Special Health Services, which is now called Special Health Services, and the Basic Care Assistant Program. So you would have the same disregard like you would for Medicaid on these programs. Whatever is in your ABLE account does not count against you. I did write the Department of Human Services policy number on that, which is number 5310, in case you have any questions about that or you're looking for that information. Okay. I have a lot of people ask me, well, I have a special needs trust, so do I need an ABLE account? Or I'm going to get an ABLE account, but do I need a special needs trust? So for my trainings, I do a training called Caregiver Cafe, so that's kind of why the ABLE account PowerPoint has some of this in there, but I think it's good for you to know. So with an ABLE account, like I said, if you meet those eligibility criteria of age and disability, ABLE accounts give you much more choice, more control. They don't cost as much to open. You actually own, the person with a disability owns that account. And then, of course, you have the tax-free benefits. Now, a special needs trust, you know, may cost you a little bit more. But there's also protections under the special needs trust that you might think that you possibly could need that as well, which one of the big ones is you can put assets into a special needs trust and you cannot into an ABLE account. So an example I use for that, again, is one of my own examples. We own a farm in northwest North Dakota, and we have mineral rights on that. And currently those might be, you know, inherited down to my son. You cannot change those into an ABLE account. So if you have mineral rights or land or anything like that, they cannot go in an ABLE account, but they can be protected for that person with a disability under a special needs trust. Okay? And again, there is limits on ABLE accounts of how much you can have in it, how much you can deposit per year, where there's usually unlimited amounts that can go into a special needs trust. It doesn't cost you very much to open an ABLE account because basically you can have $20 in there, where special needs trust, if you're going through an attorney, which you should probably to make sure you're following all the laws, that's going to cost you some money. In an ABLE account, the owner is the beneficiary, where in a special needs trust, you can have more than one beneficiary of that. ABLE accounts do have a Medicaid clawback, and most special needs trusts do as well, but not all. And let's say you have an ABLE account and you're, you know, at a pretty high amount. You saved a really good amount of money, and then all of a sudden you found out you inherited some money. Well, it might be over the limits of what you can have in an ABLE account for that year or deposit in an ABLE account for that year. Because remember, you can only deposit up to $15,000 in a year. Okay? You can have more in there, but only deposit $15,000. So let's say 1 year you inherited $30,000 that you didn't know about. Well, you can't deposit that into an ABLE account, which could lead you into trouble if you're receiving benefits such as Social Security income, because they're going to count that as income, okay? So it's always a good idea to talk to your relatives and stuff to let them know how some of this works so you're not getting unexpected inheritance that you're not sure you know what to do with. So that special needs trust might be a way to protect that. Because then the trust would own those dollars or what you inherited, and not the individual itself. So that's kind of what I'm going to say about special needs trust, but if you have questions on those later on, we can talk about them. Again, I can tell you what I know, and if I don't know, I can send you some resources about special needs trust as well. So I'm kind of going to skip the next two slides. As I said, they go with my caregiver training, but it talks in there about the different types of trust, so you have that so you can look at them. So contributions to enable account. Contributions to enable account can be made by the beneficiary, so whoever the account owner is. So if I have an ABLE account and I get my check from my work and I get my SSI check, I can deposit what I need to in the account. Third-party people can, such as parents, caregivers, or whatever. They can also contribute to an ABLE account. Okay, and here's, like I said, one of the big important things to remember, that contributions are all post-tax dollars, okay? So what is in the account and distributes qualified expenses, though, is tax-free and tax-exempt, okay? So, you know, that's important to remember of post-tax dollars and that you're not using ABLE accounts to hide money. It's more like using it as a savings account, and what's in that savings account is tax-free. Trust funds, so including special needs trust, cannot be rolled over into an ABLE account. That has recently just changed, and I got to do some upwork on this, but you can roll some dollars into special needs trust funds. They're still working out the details at the IRS, so if you have that situation right now, I would hold off till the regulations come out. On how that's going to look. 529 college savings accounts can currently be rolled into ABLE accounts. There is all the guidance on that, and that started in January of 2018. So if you currently have had a 529 account for someone and they are eligible for an ABLE account, you can take those dollars and roll them all into one. Okay? And then sometimes states offer a one-time rollover of one ABLE account to another ABLE account. That'll make more sense when we talk about the states that offer ABLE accounts and how North Dakota plays a part in that, because in North Dakota, we do not have a financial institution that houses ABLE accounts. North Dakota chose not to do that. And the total annual contributions, again, is $15,000, okay, so not deposit more than $15,000 in a year. And currently, the total aggregated amounts for a lifetime are, for most accounts, $225,000 up to $500,000. On most ABLE accounts, the average is about $350,000. You can have over a lifetime in an ABLE account. So it's a lot of money. And I just lost my slide. I'm sorry. Well, I'm pulling it back up. Does anybody have any questions so far? Nope. Going pretty good. I'm not going too fast. I know we have a limited amount of time, so.
Vicki, can you talk a little bit about the payback, like the Medicaid payback for those?
What a Medicaid payback is? Okay, so if you are, I can talk a little bit about it. If you are currently receiving Medicaid payments, in certain cases, like I said, a special needs trust or an ABLE account, upon death, Medicaid can go back and take assets or income that may be left over, okay? You hear more, you probably have heard maybe more about this when an elderly or somebody goes into a nursing home. They're trying to deplete all their assets so that the government doesn't take those back. That's what we call a Medicaid clawback. And so I can only really speak highly to the ones in the ABLE accounts that I've done training on with the IRS. So the IRS will tell you, yes, they can come back and take those dollars, but there's nothing filed. In other words, the IRS has to find you. CMS doesn't file it. So CMS would be the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare. Okay?
Okay.
Currently, the IRS has not audited any ABLE accounts yet. okay? I assume that will change. But the nice thing we're going to talk about is what you can do with an ABLE account upon those deaths that you can't always do with other, like, you can't always do them with special needs trusts. It depends on what kind you're working on. But how to protect more of those dollars from a Medicaid clawback.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Okay, so I'm going to go on to what qualified disability expenses are. So a qualified disability expense are expenses related to a designated beneficiary's blindness or disability and are for the benefit of that designated beneficiary in maintaining or improving his or her health, independence, or quality of life. Okay, so this is how Social Security describes qualified disability expenses, okay? But the IRS governs ABLE accounts, and they broaden that. And so we're going to take a look at how broad that actually gets. But this gives you an idea about it. But, again, make note that land, large inheritance, mineral rights, certain assets, if you know those are coming in, I highly suggest you get a special needs trust. Now, you can have both. I have both for my son. So it doesn't limit you to just one, but at least then you're protecting those assets or income. So examples of qualified expenses that you could use an ABLE account for. There's lots of them, education, you know, secondary education, most definitely what you're using for, meal plans, transportation that you may need. You can use them for housing just like you can for rent, mortgage, property taxes, whatever they may be, employment opportunities for job coaching, assistive technology, personal support devices, any health prevention and wellness that might not be covered by any other economic assistance program you may be on. We have financial management. You can pay for legal fees. I have people ask me, well, I'm going to go through guardianship too. Can I use an ABLE account to pay for that? Absolutely. All your basic living expenses. And then we're going to talk about this funeral and burial expense. So, just know that the examples for what expenses you can use it for are extremely broad and have been broad since the beginning. Legislation made it that way, so you could use it for just like somebody else would use a savings account or type of checking account for. And one of the nice things that they did when they did qualified disability expenses is you can use them for a third party. So, example, if my son wanted to take his teachers out for lunch for all the hard work they did, he can pay for that out of his ABLE account, okay? If a person wants to buy Christmas presents for someone, they can pay for that out of an ABLE account. Currently, it's harder to find things that the ABLE account can't be used for more than what it can be used for. One of the things they did send down guidance on is if you're using an ABLE account to pay for your mortgage or rent, you cannot prepay rent or mortgage. It has to be during that month. So if you have an ABLE account, you want to pay your rent out of that for May, it has to be for May. You can't pay for June beforehand. Okay, that's one guidance they gave out for housing. Typically, I have families that I've helped open ABLE accounts. If they're really questioning, I'm not really sure, and I don't want to be in trouble, you know, I always tell them they can give me a call. I've had so many call that I have a phone number for a person at the IRS, and I usually ask him. And he's pretty honest with me. Even if he doesn't know, he goes, you know, it's better not using for it than getting caught later down the line, but just to know that it's very broad. You know, somebody called me the other day and said, you know, Vicki, you helped me open this ABLE account. Can I use it for my son's school lunches? Yep. Yeah, you can use it for that. Other people call me, can he buy a computer off of it? Yep, you can use it for that. So there's many things that you can use it for. Now, when we talk about the end-of-life experiences with that, so funeral, so you can use all dollars in an ABLE account to pay for all funeral expenses. You can also pay all any other debt that might have been incurred under an ABLE account, okay? And typically, one of the questions that came up was, well, how does somebody do that if they don't have access to that ABLE account? Because the beneficiary is the owner of that who happened to pass away. What you do need is a death certificate, and then the financial institution that is holding that ABLE account, you need to present that to them. You need to show them all the expenses that you have, and they'll automatically take that out of the ABLE account and make that to the payer of who is ever in charge. So whether that's a guardian, a rep payee, and if there was no one left, they consider just immediate family. Okay, so no cousins. It can be a brother, a mother, a father, or a sister. Okay. If there's still dollars that are left in there that aren't being used for any funeral or last expenses, those dollars go into the financial institution and then are reported to the IRS. So they'll either go back as a Medicaid clawback, or they get eaten up somewhere else in the government, okay? So you always want to keep that in mind when you have an ABLE account, okay, that you're making sure that somebody else knows about your ABLE account, like knows where it exists, okay, knows who the financial institution is, so somebody else can take care of that, okay? Does anybody have any questions on examples of what you could use that disability expenses are?
Vicki, what if it's a grandparent? Does that apply? So
a grandparent who is a guardian or just a grandparent?
What if the grandparent is not a guardian?
Okay. Currently, the IRS states immediate family as a mother, a brother, a father and sister, so they do not include grandparents. But one thing you can do is put someone else in charge of that. So, like, say you have a power of attorney. A power of attorney can be written up that they can take care of all those expenses, okay? So a power of attorney actually takes precedent, or as much precedent as immediate family. So you always want to be guarding things at the end, because on a ABLE account, you can't have a beneficiary. So we can't just say, ooh, you know, we'll just transfer that money somewhere else. The only way you can transfer ABLE account monies upon death is if there's someone in the immediate family, again, who also is disabled, who also has an ABLE account. Then those dollars can transfer over to that other person's ABLE account. So if you are a grandparent and you're not a guardian, or you're not a power of attorney that's been assigned, and the burial expenses come up, like I said, one thing you can do, the beneficiary itself, unfortunately the person who has deceased, could have pre-written what they want for funerals. And then there's already oversight, so there's oversight that those expenses are going to be used for that. But if nothing has been done and a grandparent comes in and says, hey, you know, we need to use this for burial expenses, unfortunately that can't work. So you always want to be protecting that, okay? But if the beneficiary itself has protected himself by saying, I pre-plan my funeral, okay? Then there's a chain of events that happened with a funeral home or however that happened, Did that answer that, or did I just make it more complicated for you?
Oh, that makes sense.
Okay. And a lot of this has not been tested yet out. So, like I said, there's always new rules that are coming out from this. And I do try to stay on top of all of that with the national organization. So I'm not saying that that won't change in the future, but that's currently how it is. Okay. So we talked about the IRS, and the IRS is the governing agency over this. So when you go are filing your taxes, there'll be a portion on your taxes that states do you have a 529A account, which is a naval account. They'll ask you to, you know, basically write in how much you have, and then the next line you take it right back out because it is tax deductible. And you will get those statements always with your ABLE account. They send those statements out to you. Here's where we talked about the expenses are very broad, and so the term qualified disability expense is broadly construed to permit the inclusion of basic expenses and should not be limited. So these are very important, which provide no benefits to others in addition to the benefit of the eligibility of individual. And that's where I was saying, if they want to buy gifts, if they want to take somebody out for lunch, maybe they want to go to the movies with somebody, those are all considered disability expenses. And also, they're not limited to the only expenses which are medically necessary, okay? So there is some penalty if you are misusing ABLE funds. You may not have more than one ABLE account for each each qualified individual. You can only, and an individual has more than one ABLE account for a period of 60 days, then they are subject to a 10% penalty and income taxation on the funds, okay? It also may affect your eligibility for federal means-tested benefits, okay? So that means they can go in and take a look. They possibly could remove you from Medicaid or Social Security, okay? So basically it's just telling you you can only have one ABLE account, period. Non-qualified disability expenses, if it is deemed during an IRS audit to be not qualified, then these funds are subject to a 10% penalty. They also may affect your federally means-tested benefits. And so currently, as I said, as of November 1st, the IRS set up, they have not audited anybody. They have not also had any question, you know, I should say, close to questioning what a disability expense is, okay? So, as I said, with those, use those very broadly, but if you're absolutely, you know, worried about maybe that doesn't qualify in there, you can give me a call and we'll try to find that out together, okay? Or just use some other type of money for that expense as well. Okay, so the ease of an ABLE account. So once you have an ABLE account, almost all of the ABLE accounts nowadays have debit cards. So they're pretty easy. You know, you'll be able to use that debit card pretty easily. You cannot use those debit cards, though, in ATMs. So you cannot get cash back from those. But the account owner, you know, he doesn't need any pre-authorization or anything to spend funds out of his ABLE account. And then ABLE account programs, they offer different ways to access funds, but as I said, most of them have the debit cards with them now. The next page, I did talk a little bit about employment-related expenses because I had a lot of people ask about those. So just know that those are definitely something you can use ABLE accounts for. And like I said, the biggest other thing is that if you are currently receiving SSI or SSID payments, you don't have to spend that money down now like you used to. Because, you know, I have a lot of people say, well, I don't have anything to spend it on. Now I have to buy things I don't really want or need. you know, there's more guidance on how you can spend Social Security dollars than there are ABLE dollars. So in 2018, there was some guidance put out by SSI. So a contribution made by the designated beneficiary, which is the person who owns the ABLE account, deposited their own ABLE account is not counted as income or resources, okay? A third-party contribution made to the beneficiary's ABLE account is also not counted, okay? Income received by the designated beneficiary then deposited into his or her own ABLE account is counted as income for the purpose of SSI or SSDI. So that's what I was saying. You can't collect, like, paycheck dollars, okay, and put them into an ABLE account and hide them from SSI, okay? You have to qualify first on SSI eligibility rules, okay? So I have an example for a person. Joe is an adult with an autism. He receives $400 a month income. So they don't count the first $85 for SSI. So he has $315 left. By their rules, they divide that half into 157.50 as countable income. Those are the SSI rules, okay? So he deposits $592.50 into an ABLE account. That's what he's depositing here. He doesn't need to spend that down, okay, to still maintain his eligibility for SSI. And he can have up to $100,000 before it'll be suspended. So as you notice, I repeated a lot of this throughout the night already about this SSI because that seems to be the most confusing for people because when ABLE accounts first started, Social Security did not put out their regulations on ABLE accounts. So a lot of people thought, oh, cool, I can make money now, hide it, and still qualify for SSI. That is not true. And if you haven't received Social Security income and you're going to apply for SSI or SSDI, they will ask you if you have an ABLE account. I have not had anybody who hasn't been asked. Okay. The next page really just talks about the Medicaid. As I said, Medicaid, whatever's in an ABLE account does not go, is not counted as income for Medicaid. Okay. Anybody else have any questions right now?
What about earnings on the ABLE account? Does one earn just like regular interest or
yep.
do you have ways
yep.
to invest?
They do earn interest. Mm-hmm. So they earn interest on that. There's always statements just like you would on a regular bank account. Those statements are put out monthly. All of this is done, like, online, so it's almost all, like, online banking, okay? Transferring funds and everything is done by online banking. Like I said, most are using the debit card of how to use and spend the money. But most of them offer if you want to do it by check or anything, you can. I would say that most of the institutions, though, are not offering that anymore. It's all done by debit. So you earn interest on it, and there typically is a charge for that debit card each month. Most of the states that offer for North Dakota to apply into it is around a $3 a month that it charges you for that debit card. Now, if you have a person and they're not, if you're a guardian for that person or you're a rep payee, you will get the debit card, but it typically will have the beneficiary's name on it, but you have the authorization to use that, of course, if you are a rep payee or a guardian or a power of attorney. And when you do an application for an ABLE account, it does ask you those questions. So my son is currently
Oh, go ahead.
And I guess I don't know how old your son is, but in the case of I have a daughter that obviously isn't old enough to earn income. So in your example, the last slide with the receives $400 per month income and, you know, all those calculations, let's say she was earning income and as a parent, you were contributing to the ABLE account, that's not considered income for her. So, I mean, you could still make that deposit just like you would if you were contributing to a 529.
Correct.
Yep. Okay. Yep. And then I have one other question in regards to on some clarification on the death benefit. So let's say you had $50,000 in your ABLE account and the beneficiary dies and there's no one else in the family that qualifies for that account, so you can't transfer that $50,000, but there are some fees, you know, like you said, funeral expenses and stuff. Let's say after that you're left with $30,000 and you had $10,000 from Medicaid clawback, so technically you're left with $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that $20,000 then just goes to the government, or what happens to that $20,000?
Correct. It goes to the government.
It does. Okay. So I thought, thanks.
Yep. So, this one thing you want to be careful about ABLE accounts, you know, is how you're saving in there, how much you're allowing to stay in there for periods of time, you know, so you don't get caught up at some point in this. But as I said, for funeral expenses, you know, one thing that can be made, I mean, if your child is still at a, you know, below the age of 18, or if you have an adult child and you're a guardian or the rep payee, you can make what I want to call just like a power of attorney or statements to this that they do have to accept. So let's say in the case of my son, I mean, I'm the guardian over him, okay? But if I wasn't the guardian over him and he happened to pass away, if I had currently set up for him, like I said, in a will, or I have a power of attorney that says this child has the ABLE account, they are going to spend this and this and this and this to pay off those, okay? All those can get paid off, okay? But that $10,000 could then, I mean, if you have that much in there and you know there's other expenses, let's just say, you know, he had a house or whatever, but he's got another month's rent to pay on that. He can pay that. You know, there's different things that he could use that for during that time, but it has to be in some kind of legal document. So typically, even though you can have $350,000 over a lifetime, when you think about the other regulations on these, they're not made for a major savings account, okay? Possibly for that fact is because you can't have a beneficiary for that. Now, there is a lot of talk of why can't you do that, because you can actually have that with the special needs trust. So that was one of the things, like I said, they haven't come down with the complete guidance on that, but let's say you have an ABLE account and a special needs trust. My son dies, we paid for the funeral, but now I have this leftover money. If that could transfer over to a special needs trust, there's beneficiaries in there. Does that kind of make a little more sense to you?
Yep, that makes sense. I was just thinking, so like at this stage, I'm not really sure. I do have a 529 for my daughter and was considering converting it to an ABLE account,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I don't know, you know, will she or will she not go to college at this point? So if you go to an ABLE account with the intent to use that for college and then she either doesn't go or she does go but doesn't, her life doesn't, you know, take her there, she doesn't reach that age to begin going to school, then any money you put in there you would lose, as opposed to a 529, you would just pay a 10% penalty and be able to take that money back, right, that you were unable to use.
Well, if you went to a ABLE account, she could use it for college. If she didn't use it for college, she could use it for other things.
Yeah, but I'm saying if, like, she died before college, before she was able
died
to start college.
Before college, correct.
And you were building that up with the intent to use it for college, so that's one risk with it. But it sounds like the ABLE account is good in the sense that if someone could qualify for SSI or SSDI, then it's a way to allow them to have assets that aren't taken into consideration when determining whether or not they qualify for that coverage.
Yeah, you would have to meet their qualifications. So like I say, you have to meet their income qualifications for that and their asset qualifications. But if you have an ABLE account, when you meet those qualifications, they make you spend down your money. So you get your next month's SSI check. So it's always a spend down. With an ABLE account, you don't have to spend that all down because you can move some of those dollars from where your SSI check was deposited and move them over to an ABLE account.
Yep, okay.
Okay, but you still have to qualify for SSI in the beginning. If you do not meet the eligibility for SSI, then, you know, you can still have an ABLE account if you have a disability certification, but it doesn't help you then because you're not on the SSI program. Basically, that legislation and government looks like this, that a lot of people who are disabled do eventually at some point in time collect Social Security. They collect SSI or SSDI benefits.
Okay.
Okay. And you really want to, you know, think about when you open an ABLE account, like you were just saying, of what you want to spend it for. You know, we open the 529 or the college accounts because we're expecting a child possibly to go to college and use it for that. So you kind of want to think about your ABLE accounts as well. Recently I had someone in my training, and they have someone that actually wants to save up and hopefully eventually buy a house at some time off of that. You know, but you do take those risks currently so far with the death benefits because you cannot have a beneficiary off of that ABLE account. As I say, some of those that are thinking about that at now also have opened a special needs trust and have made it certain that dollars that are left over after funeral expenses will transfer over into a special needs trust, because that currently just came down as law, but how that works, the regulations about how that works have not come out yet. They are expecting that in early 2020. Like ABLE accounts were able to open almost a full year before SSI put out their regulations on it, Social Security Administration. So they move at a slower pace. A lot of ABLE accounts, also you can invest money. They offer investment choices. And I just give you a brief look at those investments. I'm not a financial investment broker or anything, so I mostly tell people if they're thinking about investing in it, you know, talk to their own financial broker about it or get the information really from the financial institution that's holding your ABLE account. But basically, like ABLE accounts, they act as savings accounts or checking accounts. So when you just take that option, you know, they're safe, they're easy access, least at risk. Like I said, the only risk right now is those death benefits. They have the debit cards that are easy. But they have a very low rate of return. If you're thinking about investing some of the dollars that you have in an ABLE account, you know, you have a better opportunity for growth. You have a higher rate return. There is also a risk of loss, like with any investments, and usually those investments are in stocks and bonds. I do have a few families, though, that have told me they have invested as well. So choosing the right option, when I talk to families or people that want to open ABLE accounts, you know, I try to guide them and say first, like I said, identify the goals that you want for an ABLE account.
And then understand the risk and how much risk you're comfortable with. And then, again, like I said, maybe looking at your options, maybe you do need both special needs trust and an ABLE account or one or the other. And those are definitely things that you want to think about. Determine different time frames. Like I said, look at your risk levels. Do you want to invest? Do you want some long-term financial goals in there? And understand what those investment options may be for you. So, again, that's more of a personal choice of how much you want to do for a risk or not. I can tell you that, like I said, a few of the persons that I have helped that have done investments have gotten quite a bit of information on that from the financial institution. One thing you want to do when you have ABLE accounts, and I'll show you the states ahead of time, but as I said, in North Dakota, we don't have an institution that houses ABLE accounts. But there are, in all the states, and most of the states now do have ABLE accounts that you can open, or they're in a consortium with another state where you can open ABLE accounts. There are a few states, and I do have them listed at the end of this PowerPoint, that you have to be a resident of that state to open an ABLE account there, okay? But all the other states, they have the option that you can open in their states. So around here, I have a lot of folks that use the ABLE Now. That's the institution. They have Virginia, South Dakota, and Alaska. Those three states were in a consortium, and it's called ABLE Now. And with those, like I said, I mean, basically you go to ABLE Now accounts, or if you're looking for other ones, we'll see at the end, you can go on the national website, and it will show you all this. You can click on the states that have ABLE accounts, and they'll take you directly to those websites. And it's all, like I said, done online. It takes about 20, maybe 25 minutes tops to fill out an application. And like I said, you don't need to upload what your disability is, or you don't need to upload a disability certificate, but you do have to keep a disability certificate on hand if you're not collecting SSI or SSDI. If you are opening an ABLE account and you already are collecting SSI or SSDI, there is a question on every application in every state that will ask you that question, okay? But part of the thing you want to do is when you choose a state of where you want your ABLE account open, you'll go to the – it's very fine print on most of these websites at the bottom. It'll say disclosure statements. So you kind of want to read those, and I stress that you read those mostly because they tell you about the little things that you may, like, not think about. And some of those are, you know, the fees that may be contributed to that. Some of the states have investment options, have higher fees. They do a lot of times tell you what's in there of non-qualified withdrawals. They tell you purposes. They tell you eligibility. I have spent some time reading the states that offer for a lot of the states that I help families open an ABLE account in, and I really haven't found anything, to my knowledge, that looks bad or has any hidden fees. The only state that I have found that in is Tennessee. There's quite a high monthly fee in the state of Tennessee. But you can just read those, and if you decide you open one and you can't find the disclosure statement, you can give me a call, and we can open that up together. So when you go to open an ABLE account, there are certain things that you will need. So you will need Social Security numbers for that beneficiary, okay, or the owner of that ABLE account. Or if you are the guardian or you're the rep payee, you will also have to have your Social Security numbers in there, or a tax identification number. They also ask for a driver's license if it's available. If it's not available,
they want a copy of that birth certificate. ABLE accounts, typically in every state, will take a JPEG, so you can take a picture of that and send to them, and that suffices it instead of uploading all the documents. They also need proof of address, so they do need a copy of a recent utility payment or a rental agreement or some type of document to show where your residency is at. Always keep a copy of your disability certificate. And then, of course, you're going to need banking account numbers. So if you are collecting SSI or SSDI and you have a bank account, they'll ask you to put that account in, and then you're establishing an ABLE account. So it's like online banking, so you can take your where you have your banking account where you may be putting all in your money right now, you're able to transfer that over to an ABLE account, okay, all online. They do accept verified copies, and you can upload them, like I said, as a JPEG. They can be uploaded in Word. So they accept all kinds of forms of those. But those are the main things that almost all states ask you to have. Like I said, it takes about 20 minutes to fill out the app. And then once you fill out the app, usually what happens is you'll get an email, and it'll tell you they're going to put a micro deposit in your account. So one of the banking account numbers that you have, they're going to deposit anywhere from 1 cent to, oh, I think right now they're using 11 cents. So you'll get notification, or you can call your bank if you didn't get notification, and you're going to have this really tiny deposit made into your account. Then you go back to your ABLE account, which you had started. You go in there, and it'll ask you how much was deposited in there, and if it's 11 cents, you put 11 cents in there. You submit it. And basically, within 3 days, your ABLE account is open. Okay? And then at that time, you can transfer any types of funds from one to the other. Okay? You can have more than one. If you have a banking account, a regular banking account, checking account, and a savings account, and now you just open an ABLE account, you can have both of those accounts in there. You're not limited onto how many accounts you can transfer money to. So once it's open, it becomes pretty easy to use. All your statements will come online. You can do all your transactions online. The nice thing is, again, this is governed by the IRS, so you always know you have the chance of being audited. You do have to keep track of all your expenses, but with most ABLE accounts, you can scan and upload your receipts, and it'll just hold all of them in there. You can write them for what they're for. They allow you to, you know, right, I use this for, but just make sure you're keeping track of all the expenses as well. Because, again, if you're audited, you're going to need that. As I said, the IRS has told us they haven't audited anybody yet, but you know that'll be coming at some time. So just like with Social Security and everything, you want to keep track of, you know, what you're spending and your receipts on that. The ABLE National Resource Center is the collaborative for supporters, and they have all the information and education on ABLE accounts. They have a ton of webinars, and they archive every webinar, so you can go on there and go through all their webinars that they put out this. And, again, it's also a place to go to when new information is coming out. You also on this website, which is www.ablenrc.org. There's a place where you can go on there and compare states in case you're thinking about which state you want to go into. It'll tell you, you can compare three states at a time. So say you were thinking about doing Minnesota, Iowa, and Nebraska. Those are places where, whether you're a resident of any state, you can open an ABLE account there. You can compare what they have. Some of them you have to have a $20 minimum in there. Some are $25. Some are actually $10 minimum. So you don't have to keep a lot of money in your ABLE account at one time. typically they're making sure you have enough in there for sure to cover their debit card that they're giving you. Then I have all my contact in there, and like I said, I do one-to-one helping people open ABLE accounts. If they're going through the process and they need some help, like I said, we can do it over the phone, we can do it over Zoom, or if you're near or I happen to be nearby you, we can definitely do those in person. And my last two slides on there, they'll tell you which states that you can open the ABLE account. Some are offering, the last one is where you have to be a resident in that state. So you have a list of states there, and like I said, I do a lot of the ABLE now. You'll see that under Virginia. South Dakota joined those, so we have a lot do those. Nebraska, I've helped folks with those. Ohio is one I've helped with a lot where these folks wanted to invest money within their ABLE account, and they've had really good success with Ohio and have found that that's a state that works really well for them. I've had some in Iowa. So people have a tendency to pick states that are close by. I found that out. I haven't seen any, you know, like I said, these states are, they're all pretty similar in how they manage their ABLE accounts, but you can compare them. So I will have people say, well, I don't understand why North Dakota doesn't have one. North Dakota, we legislated for them to have one, but they just decided not to. So there's information always, you know, on ABLE accounts at the Bank of North Dakota, though. Most of these states, it's a financial institution, such as the Bank of North Dakota would be here, that is holding those ABLE accounts. So, you know, I know it's getting late, but I definitely could take some questions, or like I said, you have my information on there. Please feel free to contact me at any time. If you have questions about ABLE accounts, I will try to help you with those. If not, I definitely will help you find the answers for those.
Thanks. Terrific job, Vicki. I learn something new every time. Does anybody have any questions for Vicki? Don't be shy.
I just want to say thanks, Vicki. That was very informative.
Well, thank you. And it's kind of a lot, like I said, to go over in an hour, but when I do these in group trainings and stuff, I typically have folks that call me and they go, you know, hey, I want to do this. And, you know, like I said, it doesn't take long. So I'm always more than willing to help anybody who wants to open an ABLE account. Because to me, they're just, you know, it was a great legislation that passed. It's a great way for persons with disabilities to have a good quality of life just like anybody else and, you know, be able to save money like everybody else. So I appreciate that.
Anyone else have any comments or questions?
Thanks, Vicki. It was great.
Oh, yep, thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
Good night, everyone. Thank you, Vicki.
Yep. Bye.
Good night.
Thank you.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 5 minutes.